The switch, yeah. So you find out with your client what that client hates the most, or something in the in the past where, so for example, they hate Coca-Cola, or they hate the smell of Coca-Cola. Yeah. So what you would do, you would switch it around and bring in the cigarettes. Yeah. But you'd mask it as they're smoking the cigarette. They're getting this, instead of getting the smell from the smoke, they're actually getting a smell of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, sure.
And then you just implement that and you hammer it in there. Like, you just keep going, you keep repeating it, and you keep repeating it until it's basically like mind training. Yeah, you're training the mind to, get that new sort of insight into it.
Thanks for being here for yet another episode of People with a Passion. Today's guest is Al Robinson, who is a hypnotherapist. He helps people change their behaviors and lives using hypnosis. He was a skeptic at first when he first encountered hypnosis. He's come from a family of hypnotists, and his mother, he used to be worried that she was always trying to hypnotize him. So he was very skeptical until a time in his life where he wanted to change some things, and he started deciding that he wanted to quit smoking, and his mother helped him quit smoking with hypnosis, and then he was sold on it to the point that he made it his career. So if you are someone that's wanting to change your behaviors or life, then he'll provide some information around NLP techniques that'll help you do that, as well as how you can connect with him if you're looking for a hypnotherapist. If you haven't yet subscribed to the channel, make sure you hit the subscribe button and, of course, the notification bell to be advised when new interviews are uploaded. I hope you enjoy this episode of People with a Passion with guest Al Robinson. Today's episode is brought to you by Applaudable.net. G'day everyone, thanks for joining us for another episode of People with a Passion. Today I'm being joined by Alan Robinson of Alan Robinson Hypnotherapy. I'm hoping that we don't get hypnotized today, but he's going to tell us all about hypnosis, as well as some of the NLP practitioner and life coaching that he does. Thanks for being here, Alan. How are
No
you going?
worries. Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. I appreciate you making the trip into the studio
No worries.
to do this. I've been doing a lot of stuff on Skype lately, so
Yeah.
having people in the studio is my preference. So the fact you've
Getting back to normal now, slowly.
Slowly,
Excuse, yeah.
yeah. So we'll get straight into it. You've been doing hypnosis for a couple of years now, but your family has a long history with hypnosis, but you were sort of a little bit standoffish with it when you were younger. Do you want to
Yes.
talk about your family's history with it, and then what led you down the path of becoming a hypnotherapist yourself?
Yeah, definitely. So we moved over from England in 2003, and my family has a massive swimming background and coaching, and when we moved over here, mum and dad were, very involved with the surf club and the swim club, and everything got involved. And then obviously they started finding out about, hypnotherapy and NLP and the benefits that it can do for, sports performance. And my mother, Julie, basically looked into it and kept on looking into it. And there were some other issues there with the family itself, with my sister, who was also a practitioner now. She had a back pain, and she tried everything. Nothing helped until she went and saw a hypnotherapist. So that was the belief for them. And then my mum, Julie, was just, "What? I want more. I want to know more. How do you do it? How do you do it? How do you do it?" And then mum ended up doing the course and went from there.
So how long has she been doing it?
Not too sure. Probably 10 year mark, I reckon, even over. Yeah.
So you only recently took this up, and you did your NLP master, sorry, you did your NLP practitioner a couple of years ago. You completed that, and you've got your hypnotherapy certifications as well. What led you down the path to actually arrive to the point where you actually decided, yeah, this is what I want to do? Because you, for a long while, resisted the whole concept of hypnosis and even being
Yeah,
hypnotized. So do you want to
definitely.
explain?
Definitely. Whenever mum would like talk to us when we were kids, especially during my teens. I wasn't a very good teenager, like most of us when we're teenagers. Mum would, you know, sometimes talk to me just like normal, and I'd be like, oh, is she trying to hypnotize me? Oh, what's going on here? So I was very skeptical about it, but I had no knowledge about it. And it wasn't until I actually did the research to benefit my own mental health that was when I found out truly what it was all about. And that was what really interested me, especially what it did for me personally with my mental health and my, you know, personal issues that I had at the time. And it was the only thing that got me out of the rut that I was in. You know?
Are you happy to speak to those experiences?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you sort of alluded that in your teenage years, you like a lot of people, go through that state of almost rebellion against what's the rules, which is not uncommon. A lot of people, that's the years we're expected to make mistakes. So you sort of indicated that there was issues with addiction there, and there was also issues with mental health related to depression. So do you want to speak to those experiences?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Pretty much started at, you know, high school. I was always very fit, very busy, especially with my sport. So I was still swimming when we moved over here, and then I found rugby. So I ended up playing rugby union. And it went off from rugby union to, you know, went down the path of, you know, the first thing was smoking and, you know, just experiencing different sort of highs, you know, as a curious teenager would be. And yeah, I just went off from there.
So there was an addictive behaviours there and trying to definitely. Find and chase the high, which, as you know, as an NLP practitioner these days, that a lot of that is masking something else, that there were other issues. So was there issues, do you feel, with you moving over from Australia? Was that a big move for you? Because you came as an early teen, and that can be pretty tough because you've almost established an identity, personality, and friends. Or?
I wouldn't think that had any effect on it, because coming out of England to here is unreal, right? Like,
you loved
England
it.
Is just boring when you're a kid, you know? All I did was just swim because I was bored and, you know, didn't have a PlayStation at the time, so.
Were you, or where do you feel that direction? Was it your own driving force to try different things? Was that the sort of inquisitive mind?
Yes.
Because I know some people can also be led by, you know, the group mentality and fitting in. So for you, was it more of a discovery
I think it was a bit of different things. Yes. It was also a thing I loved. My family being with a massive sport background, it was no cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
No rebellion. No this, no that, no this, no that, you know. Obviously very strict with, you know, the physical work that, you know, they would do as athletes, yeah. And I think it was just a way of rebelling against that, maybe. But I do believe with me, it was a bit of everything. It was a bit of fitting in with my mates, you know. If my mates were like, you know, let's go smoke a joint across the road from school,
yeah,
I'd be like, yeah, too easy, let's go, you know. So I do believe it was a bit of everything involved in it.
It didn't immobilize you completely because you managed to become a chef. So it wasn't like life stopped for you because of
that. Yeah, look, it did stop at a certain stage, I think, when I was 15. There was certain things that actually caught up with me, especially with the law. And that was a big eye-opener. And I think the biggest smack in the face that woke me up was my father telling me that if I go to jail, then I'm pretty much out of the family, basically. Yeah. And that was like a wake-up call to be like, shit, I need to sort my stuff out.
Yeah.
You know?
So at what time frame in your life did depression become a thing for you?
Definitely, it wasn't during the drugs and the rebellion, weirdly enough. It was when I came back to normality. So when I moved back in with mum and dad, I started, you know, working. I left school in grade 10.
Yeah.
And I moved out of home, lived with a girlfriend in the hinterland, Yandina Way, and went from there. And then I basically moved back in and, you know, obviously didn't have to pay rent, but I wanted to get a job. And yeah, I ended up getting a job back in hospitality, which I was always in and out of hospitality as a dishwasher, kitchen hand.
Yeah.
So it was something that I knew. It was something that I had experience with, even though I was only, you know, I was probably about 16 then.
Yeah, sure.
So at least I had that experience already. So I was ahead of other people that had stayed in school, you know, because I was working straight away to be able to pay for all the stuff that I wanted.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. So tell me, what was school like for you? Like obviously you're making these decisions as a teenager, but what was the school life? Were you a good student, or was school not what you were invested in?
I was a terrible student, but I was a smart ass, and I was funny, and I loved to entertain.
Yeah.
You know, so it was, I enjoyed school. Luckily enough, I wasn't at a private school.
Sure.
You know, because imagine that. But no.
So you enjoyed the company and the socialization
and
a form of attention, I guess. If your mates thought you were funny, that was almost an acceptance.
Yeah, more of a like a entertainment sort of, you know, if I made, you know, somebody laugh by me acting like a dickhead, then that's it. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. You know,
I think there's a little bit in that in a good amount of us.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not an unhealthy thing. Yeah. Again, you know, when it's just done.
I didn't really pick anything up at school, especially high school. I tried, but it just kept on failing. Like my year 8 report card is like E. And then if I got a D+, I was like, yes.
Well, improvement. So let's talk a little bit about arriving to come to be hypnotized to start believing, hey, this may actually help me, and how that's led you to doing what you do today. So at what point did you decide and who hypnotized you the first time you allowed yourself to be hypnotized? Because one of the things with hypnosis is you actually have to give people permission to do it. You have to be accepting that there's a chance it'll work, because if you've got any degree of skepticism, you're more likely not to have any success with it. So do you want to explain your changing your beliefs around it, even though your mum was a hypnotist? What worked for you?
The first time I tried hypnosis was actually with my mum. I went and saw a totally random hypnotherapist on the Sunshine Coast. And he was just wearing a suit, tie, and here's me walking in with like shirt and a shorts. It just wasn't there at all. And the first time I got hypnotized by mum was, I think it was for smoking cigarettes. I couldn't believe it. I was like, why haven't I done this before? This is just the feeling. It was nice to have that with everything going on in life.
So what was the feeling? So you've just described things were going on in life. You get hypnotized. You come out of your first hypnosis session. What is the feeling that you're experiencing?
Yeah. It's just...
You felt energized?
Let's do it. Yeah.
So definitely. Motivation?
Yeah, definitely. Massively. Yeah. But it was also a way to... It was a form of investigation for me as well. Because it was like, I don't want to pay the money for, you know, smoking, because I was still smoking at the time, but it was more of a, I need to check this out, I need to see it was a test. Yeah.
So and how open were you on your first, like, were you at that point saying, okay, I'm going to do this, so I need to be as open as possible about the chances of it working, and that I need to be open-minded?
I think the good thing was it was with my mum.
Yeah.
You know, so obviously my mum knows me since I was born. So there was that connection there. There was the rapport was there. The comfortability was there.
There's a lot of myths around hypnosis and what it actually is and what it actually does, which is, you could say, caused by Hollywood more than anything else. It has a bit of a bad rap, and it's seen as an alternative sort of form of therapy. But do you want to explain the process? Because this sparked your interest in it to the point that once you got hypnotized, you then said, because it helped you, you yeah. go, wow, this there is something to this. Now I'm interested.
Yeah.
So it was that experience literally changed your whole life to the point now you're looking at helping others using hypnotherapy as well as your NLP and your life coaching. Yeah. Explain to me what hypnotism actually is from what you've studied.
The best way I like to describe it to my clients without getting too technical is it's a heavy relaxation where basically your conscious mind, which is the mind that is talking right now, I'm saying words, yeah, but my unconscious mind is chucking my hands around like an idiot, yeah, and it gives the chance for our conscious mind to relax and just back off a bit and lets us work with the unconscious mind.
You talk about the conscious mind, that we're doing things all the time subconsciously.
Yeah, driving. Driving. When we drive, sometimes you might be driving and you just subconsciously just flick the indicator up and turn left. And then you think 5 minutes back and you're like, oh, when did we turn left and put an indicator on? You know, so there's a bit of a drive there with it. We do actually go into hypnosis all the time, you know, watching a movie. Yeah, when we're in a movie, when we're, you know, it's a sad scene in the movie, our mind starts to feel those feelings of what's going on in that movie, yeah?
So getting someone into a state of hypnosis, which there are different types of methodologies to actually produce a state where people are then suggestibility that you can sort of make suggestions to them to change their behaviors. Because ultimately, that's what you're trying to achieve with hypnosis, is a change of state, yeah?
It's not just like changing the state. It's also, I guess it's building rapport with your unconscious mind. Yeah? So it's building a relationship that you might not have realized that you can have with your unconscious mind. So the client can figure out, why am I doing these behaviors? What is driving these behaviors? Yeah? So where is the main engine? Why am I smoking? Why am I drinking 2 bottles of red wine a night? Why am I doing anxiety when I'm trying to be up on stage? Yeah, so it's more of a building a relationship, building a rapport with your unconscious mind. And that's what we're trying to do, is work out, get these conscious mind and unconscious mind to come together and work together.
Yeah.
Basically.
But yeah, so we do things without the thought process. And I guess what you're trying to do is, when you're connecting that unconscious mind and the conscious mind, is you're trying to have the unconscious mind marry up with what you are aware of. Mm. So it's almost bringing to awareness the things you may not consider when you go to do something. So with your process of getting someone into hypnosis, I imagine you've got a multitude of clients. So are you taking a different approach with those clients?
Yeah, every client is different. I think when I was doing my case studies with the course I did, obviously it was by the book.
Yeah.
Had to, you know, had a little script.
Yeah, sure.
But now it's just got to be tailor-made for the client.
So what are some of the examples that you could give of hypnotherapy with a client with your approach? So I like basketball, for example, is probably where I'll go.
Yeah.
You've met me for the first time. What are you saying to me? And then before we go into a session, what's the process that you'd be applying if you've just met me for the first time?
Well, I would probably look at the positives in playing basketball, the feelings of actually getting a swish, yeah, and using that. So magnifying that feeling, that, you know, because when you, like, I don't know about you, but when I've done something pretty cool, I have a, oh, that was pretty cool. Yeah. So I would magnify that and utilize that in with it.
So with hypnosis, how do you get someone into a state of hypnosis? Don't have to hypnotize me on camera, but what's your process?
Just like that. No. look, it, a lot of breathing. I love getting the client in control. They've got to be in control, and that comes with rapport, that comes with comfortability. Yeah, so I sort of give a little bit to the client to, you know, and I start with breathing. So if they're a bit like edgy and they might be shaking their leg like this and they might be, then I might just start going, okay, well, when you're ready, how about you just start taking some, you know, deep breaths in and out until you start feeling more and more relaxed.
Yeah, sure.
So it gives the client a sense of, what's the word?
You said control.
Control, yeah.
So you were alluding before we came into the studio here. Mm. I asked you about the you know, quick incantation methods where you click your finger or you grab an arm or whatever. And you said the problem with that approach, while it does work, it gives the hypnotist a sense of control, and people like to feel that they actually have control. So your approach is very much geared around ensuring that the client is comfortable with the process.
Exactly, because the main question that I get from clients or future clients or clients that, you know, are just investigating it is, will I be in control?
Mm. And yeah, and I think anyone who's seen like stage hypnotists, which can give hypnotists a bad name, for two reasons. One is that potentially with a hypnotist on stage, is it is purely for entertainment value, and people seem to have completely lost control.
Yeah,
and then there's the myth around whether those people, and some actually do play to the hypnotist. Mm. They may not well be hypnotized. Not all, but some, and they try and eliminate them.
Some might just be doing the hypnotist a favor, you know, what happens there is that they shortlist people. Yeah. So they shortlist them. So they give them a go under hypnosis. And if they're highly suggestive, so say if I was going to go on stage and, you know, I had to choose between you and someone else. Yeah. Then I would go, okay, I would put you into a pretty quick induction of hypnosis. Yeah. And I would say, right, now I want you to touch your nose.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you touch your nose, bingo, you're the man. Yeah?
Yeah.
You're the man to make me look good, yeah? If I did it to the other person just goes, And then the conscious mind starts kicking in. The guy's sitting there going, why is he getting me to touch my nose?
Yeah.
Then it's not going to...
So let's talk about suggestibility a bit, actually, because that's a demonstration of suggestibility. So people who are highly... suggestible and let's define that. So what is suggestibility?
Suggestibility is utilizing what the client wants. Yeah. So it's thinking ahead. So if the client wants to quit smoking, you can give them a suggestion of, you know, you were only going to have 2 cigarettes tomorrow instead of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's basically how it works. If the client, now this is the interesting thing here, is if the client does not want to do that suggestion 100%, won't work.
So the person that they've got to want that change to occur or want to, or be open to that suggestion.
Exactly. And that's hard with addictions as well, because sometimes with addictions, there's a positive gain there. So they're doing it for something or it's giving them something.
So 2 questions around suggestibility then in coming into the side of addiction. So often you do hear people try hypnosis and they think it's a one session
one fix. Hit wonder. Yeah.
So they think, oh, I get hypnotized and that, and that's it. So I imagine over time, people who have been hypnotized, as they become more comfortable with it, become more susceptible to suggestibility, meaning they're more accepting of it, and therefore more sessions may result in better results.
The first session, there's a lot of work. There's a lot of work to do. There is a lot of work to do. And I tell my clients as soon as they sit in the chair, if you're ready and you want to pursue this, then... It just doesn't happen like that. There is a lot of work. There is, you know, I implement coaching as well as NLP and hypnotherapy. So, especially with addictions, I love using a coaching approach, because sometimes you can see a therapist for, let's say, you know, addicted to smack or something, mm-hmm. yeah? And they would, you know, do their stuff, blah, 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 blah. You walk out, see you next week. What happens in between?
Yeah.
That space between, yeah? You go crazy.
So
get back on it.
When you're talking to the subconscious mind, and are you trying to create triggers and changes of behavior so that when the subconscious would think of doing something ahead of you doing it, I guess, are you trying to reprogram that aspect where they're like, I know one of the examples, and this is a good example for an entertainment style of thing, is they can hand someone something that tastes terrible and make it taste okay, like an onion, for example. The onion test. So I've heard with, say, cigarette smoking and that the behavior is that you convince them that every time they put a cigarette to their mouth,
the good old switch.
That there's something terrible about it, like it might have poo on the end.
Definitely. So that's a very popular NLP technique useful.
The switch.
Yeah. So you find out with your client what that client hates the most, or something in the past where, so for example, they hate Coca-Cola, or they hate the smell of Coca-Cola. Yeah. So what you would do, you would switch it around and bring in the cigarettes. Yeah. But you'd mask it as they're smoking the cigarette. They're getting this, instead of getting the smell from the smoke, they're actually getting a smell of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, sure.
And then you just implement that and you hammer it in there. Like, you just keep going, you keep repeating it, and you keep repeating it until it's basically like mind training. Yeah, you're training the mind to, you know, get that new sort of insight into it.
Yeah. I've spoken with a number of neuro-linguistic programmers on the show. Not many, but a handful. It's something that, again, alternative approach, psychologists are using the same principles, and I think because you're not studying necessarily psychology, you're doing an external course, and it is a different line of practice, but some of both psychologists and NLP practitioners use a lot of the same tools and approaches. With NLP, it is actually programming. So the people I've spoken to have said everything that we do at every thing that we either learn or experience we have or situation we're in, there is some piece of that that gets interpreted and stored to be recalled later, whether it's needed or not. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the subconscious that we don't even and aren't even aware of. It's sifting through what's relevant.
Beliefs. That's a big one.
So when we talk about NLP, let's talk about this concept of program, because what hypnosis is actually trying to do is to change that program, as exampled by the Coke smell in the smoke of a cigarette. So do you want to talk about the programming side of what you do? And you talked about the repetitiveness. Anything that changes behavior, you have to repeat it over and over and over again, definitely. Whether it be that suggestibility is being repeated, or you as a person have to physically repeat the behavior. So let's talk about behaviors, beliefs, because you brought that up, and also programming.
Programming, yeah. So with programming, the mind loves repetition, yeah? So you think about learning, yeah? So how do we learn to ride a bike? How do we learn how to play basketball? We don't just do it like that. It's repetition. Yes. And that is the exact same thing with anything with the mind. When you're learning new behaviors, new good behaviors, there needs to be a repetition there. Yeah. So it sinks in. 9 times out of 10, if somebody is more conscious about a unconscious behavior, then naturally it's like, oh, don't do that. Yeah. So say if someone's shaking a leg when they're nervous, yeah, they might have been doing that for 15 years or whatsoever and haven't even realized that, you know, it could be something to do with anxiety.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah? So, yeah, that's definitely a good point.
So you raise the topic of beliefs. Where does that impact hypnosis?
So beliefs are huge. Everybody has beliefs. Our belief system is basically us. Yeah? Our gestalt, in a way, it's who we are, Yeah. And beliefs could be also something from the past as well. Growing up, when you're young and you learn lessons and learnings and stuff from your parents or your sisters or your family, yeah, you can have a belief that, you know, drinking a carton of Corona a night is normal.
Yes.
As long as you have been building a house all day. Yes, yeah, so that's where the belief is there. Yeah. So what happens is there is that the client will have a belief and it will be so strong because they believe that that is the truth. Yeah. But then I come in and I challenge that belief to help them. I will challenge that belief and say, okay, well, how is it true? How do you benefit from it? You know, and I really challenge that.
Did you go through that process yourself with a lot of your beliefs? Is that something you've had to do to change?
Definitely.
So how much of your experience do you feel helps you help others?
A lot with addictions.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a massive understanding that you can't just walk out of a session and go, oh, I'm never going to smoke a cigarette again in my whole life.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm fixed. You know, some people need a helping hand in the meantime, in between the sessions. Yeah. So I love implementing coaching. So I might send a client a text and say, how many cigarettes have you had today?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And if they tell me 10, and their normal number was, you know, something 20, and they've cut back by half, I'd be like, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Keep going. That's great. Yeah, so it's in, there's that motivation that keeps motivating them and helping them. Because sometimes the belief can still be creep up and go, oh, it's okay, I'll just buy another packet, it'll be fine, it'll be fine. It's normal. Yeah. I've been smoking all my life and I haven't been sick, or, you know, but mm-hmm. then there's that belief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I saw one of your clients actually posted on your social medias that they have a business coach and a sports coach, but they never for once considered that they would need a life coach.
That was a good one.
And until they met you and the hypnosis, and you talk about your coaching.
Yeah.
I think they had quit smoking is one of the things that they indicated, was it?
I think it was sugary. Oh,
was it? Drinks?
Energy
drinks. Oh, yeah, it was. Yes, yeah, yeah, it was. Yeah, so yep. There you go. So, example.
Doesn't really give you wings.
is that one?
Yeah.
All right. So, again, addiction is highly caffeinated sports drink. So, it's not just a sports drink. It's actually, there's something in there as well that is a substance that's making them or contributing to their wanting to drink it.
Yeah.
So, similar, you know, to cigarettes and nicotine and things like that. So, yeah, it's a good example there that I've seen.
It is a good one because everything needs to be tailor-made. So that client's sessions were tailor-made to who she was and that client's beliefs. Yeah?
Yeah.
The beliefs was that the client was very athletic. Yeah, like overly athletic. Like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, whoa, calm down. Yeah, but, you know, like good on that person for doing it. And it came to the decision that, well, hang on a minute, you've got a coach for that, you've got a coach for that, I'll be a coach for energy drinks, bring it on, let's do it. And obviously kept implementing the sessions there, but it was a simple, just a checkup text message every afternoon saying, oi, how many have you had today?
Yeah.
And it gradually weaved off.
Yeah.
I think that's been more of a higher success for me with addictions, is weaving the clients off, not smacking them in and going, no way. Because other things can arise and it can get so much harder, you know. So, yeah, I do believe that, you know, having... I wish I had it when I was younger, you know, so someone that can, you know, give you a kick up the bum and go, oi, how many of that have you had today? Yeah.
So accountability, it's interesting. People think that they can hold themselves to account, but it's very hard to.
Yeah, it's very hard.
So having someone else in your corner that actually can ask you that question of yourself where you have to... if you've got that rapport and that relationship, you give an honest answer, then you realise, well, if my outcome or what I'm trying to achieve here requires me to do less, and I'm not, and someone's saying, well, have you done?
Yeah.
And you say no, then you have to accept that you're not, you know, changing or you're not moving forward. Whereas on the flip side, you said if someone actually says, oh, I've had 10 when I normally have 20, then you're acknowledging that, and that motivation becomes, well, great, keep going. Let's tomorrow see if we can get to 9 or 8 or 7.
Next week, we'll go 5.
And if you see come 5 next week, and how does that make the client feel about themselves as they see those numbers fall?
Because the best way to describe this, and I say this to all my clients as well, I explain about like just a mountain, like Mount Everest, and you have all the base camps, yeah? And if you're down the bottom of Mount Everest and you're only focusing on top of the mountain, it is going to be hard to get there. Really hard. But if you focus on the base camps and you take base camp, base camp, base camp, when you get to that base camp, you have an opportunity to look behind and go, yeah, right. Look what I just did. Pretty cool. Yeah. So it's like a self-motivation there.
Mm.
And so I don't want my clients to focus on, oh, no more anxiety at all. I want to have control over anxiety. Yeah. I want my clients to go base by base by base. I want them to grow. Yeah.
Yeah.
If they just skip that growing and the lessons and the learnings, then they're just focusing on it, but they're still at the bottom.
Yeah, so I've heard similar analogies like with ladders, like each rung of a ladder to arrive to the top. So which both are great analogies if people want to understand how to achieve something, and that's why they often, you see the ladder of success is because that's the approach of process of that you don't arrive at the end.
You've got to love the process. You've got to use the process of it. So many, especially nowadays, with, you know, the generations that are coming up, you know, with children, unfortunately, they're not getting taught the processes of coming last, the processes of, you know, coming third instead of first. Yeah. It's not by enjoying the processes, you're going to enjoy the growing of yourself as a human to getting to where you want to be, to that first place.
So what would you say to like audience that are listening, if they're not comfortable with hypnosis, let's talk about ways that they might better understand it or resources they might be able to look at to get a feel for what it really is about.
There is so much stuff out there. YouTube.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah, even like YouTube and have a look, and you know, even don't research into the old 17th century stuff where it was a bit weird.
Yeah,
obviously there was a lot of amazing work that was done and research that was done back then in Europe, you know, which is where, you know, hypnosis originated from. But look into it and look into the therapist that you want.
So who are some of the therapists that they would be keen to look at?
Well, it all depends. It all depends on what they are. If they want somebody that's, you know, going to be in a smart shirt and a smart suit and tie, then look at the person's profile picture of their business. Yeah. And if you want somebody that could be a bit like a psychologist way, but do the hypnosis, then just figure out what you want first.
Yeah, so what you're comfortable with.
What you're comfortable with, because it's going to be very hard to get work done if the client isn't comfortable.
Yeah, sure. So what are some of the NLP techniques you apply to your life coaching? So are you able to talk about, you know, what some of the, because there's a number of different approaches and strategies to bring about change in lives.
Yeah.
Are there any that you find work? Obviously, everyone's different, but are there any that you sort of gravitate to because they seem to have a higher success in helping people deal with, you know, change?
Boundaries.
Yeah.
That's a good one. So boundaries is something that we can vision or get the feeling or the sensation from, and using it in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, for example, a rock and roll star might be, you know, about to go on stage, but he might even look at the floor and go tap his feet on something, and, you know, that gives him, he gets that sensation, and then he goes out and absolutely rocks it, you know?
So what's he trying to do with that? Is that creating a state of like, something that triggers the feeling before you do something?
Yeah, it's something that's...
building familiarity?
Yeah, but also... training yourself that you will be fine.
Okay.
You know, so it's a good one for nerves.
Yeah, sure.
For example. And that can be tailor-made to anybody. And look, it can be something so simple. It could even be, you know, there's even boundaries where you can think of, say, if somebody is, you know, very emotional at work or at home and they can't switch off, then there's something that they can do. They can do exercises in using a boundary. They walk through a door, and okay, that door, their front door, can be a boundary that they walk in and they leave the stuff about work at that door.
Yeah, sure.
So it's different. There's so many different things, and it all depends on the client. It depends, you know, what the client does, what the client likes.
Yeah. So I'm self-employed, so that... That statement actually rings true to me because I have an office space, and the moment I leave
the space... So there could also be an anchor, yeah? So when you're... you could invest in a shirt, yeah? Mm-hmm. A business shirt that you're wearing now, so that you only are in your work mode when you are wearing your shirt.
Yeah.
That way, as soon as you take your shirt off and you put a casual one on, you're back in action, yeah? Yeah. And if you keep practicing these, it's going to get easier and easier to separate the both.
Yeah, sure.
And that's interesting that you brought that up, because obviously that is the way to go, and the way that the way of work that has been happening lately.
Because one of the
COVID and everything like that. And look, it's not easy working from home. Yeah, it's hard to separate it, but you do have the power in you to use these boundary games to help yourself to really dissociate from going from a different state. Yeah. Because we're all different at work, and we're all different at home. We're all different at the gym. We're all different in the surf. We're all different wherever we are. Yeah. So why not use that to our potential?
I think one of the biggest problems with being self-employed is when you actually have a workspace at home to separate your home life from your work life. So you can find yourself working all hours of the day because you are self-employed. So to making that ability to treat the day like a normal working day, where you choose to, you know, it might be 5, 6, whatever time it might be, that when you close that door behind you, that you actually... finished for the day.
Yeah.
And that you're not venturing back into the next day. You've got to create that separation and balance in work life.
You don't want to mix it up, but there's little things you can use, even buy yourself a work watch.
Yeah.
And that as soon as you stop working or you go on lunch with your family, you take that watch off and you leave it on the desk and you go out and you know, and it's a way of just counteracting and like spacing it apart mentally. Yeah.
You're doing the hypnosis where you have the client come to you.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other things that you give those that you're hypnotizing the tools to reinforce and work in their own time with self-hypnosis strategies? Or
not self-hypnosis, but definitely using anchors and boundaries like what we've just, you know, discussed. Another one as well is like release techniques. You know, I might tailor make a release technique. So when they have like a really bad feeling, or the anxiety or depression comes back in their mind and they're stuck in a rut and they're like, oh, I just did a session the other day. Why is it happening? Yeah. So it's something that I can, you know, teach them to release it, whether it's blowing it out or whether it's, you know, all depends on, you know, what the client is good at in that sense. But at the end of the day, the client needs to practice and practice, because you're not going to be able to train your mind without repetition.
Yeah.
So when a client sees me and they go, oh, I tried the release technique, it didn't work. And then straight away I ask, how many times did you try?
Yeah.
Have you been practicing it, you know? And I always say, like, on a happy note with the client, I'm always like, have a play with it. Like, investigate it. Sometimes it might change as well, especially with boundaries, yeah? So we're talking about the watch, talking about you could have a necklace, you could use the headphones that you wear when you're on the laptop, yeah? As soon as you put down the headphone, bang, out of it, you know?
Yeah, sure. So this became a passion for you after you experienced success with hypnotherapy.
Yeah.
But what is the driving motivator for you taking it up? Like, what gives you
look, it was... Growing up, I was in and out. I'd be good for like 6 months, and then I'd be back in again. And I'd be, you know, and then I'd be good for a year, and then I started a chef apprenticeship, back into it.
Yeah.
You know, finished chef apprenticeship, back into it. You know, and I was in and out, in and out, in and out. And I could never, like, stay on, like, a good level. And it was... Being in the industry, it's a pretty hectic industry, especially with mental health.
Yeah.
It's pretty full on, and obviously working my approach when I work as a chef is I'm just like the kid at high school that I was. I am a joker.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And it was great. I enjoy making my workmates laugh even while we're trying to pump out 120 meals in like an hour.
Yeah.
You know, which can be very stressful. But because we're having fun, it's making it. And it was that sensation that, you know, I was actually helping in a way.
Yeah.
And that was what I wanted.
So with your hypnosis, that's the driving motivator for you is to feel that you can help someone change their life and seeing them.
And getting that, you know, review on Facebook, or getting the, you know, testimonial about the energy drink. It's the having the impact on somebody's life to, you know, so that they can better themselves and they can actually get that goal to where they want.
Look, I think we'll wrap it up there,
yeah.
Alan. I'll make sure I put links in the description below of
Thank
where
you.
People can get hold of
yeah,
you
of course.
If they want, you know,
That'd
to find
be awesome.
Out more.
Yeah, definitely.
And I really appreciate you coming and devoting time and energy to talking about your passion.
Thanks for having me.
Hypnotherapy and also the life coaching and the NLP stuff that you do. And I would like to leave you with the last word. If you have anything you'd like to say to the audience around, you know, hypnotherapy or the myths around it or something like that, to encourage them to try it if they're looking for something and other methods haven't worked.
Like an ending message.
Yeah, an ending message. Yes. So you're getting sleepy.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Turn your phone off now. take care of yourselves. Yeah. Remember your priorities. Your priorities might be your children. Your priorities might be your... you know, make up in the morning, or your priorities might be going to the gym or work, but at the end of the day, the number one priority needs to be yourself, and you need to make sure you look after yourself, not only physically but mentally. And yeah, if you got any questions, any inquiries, message the page, give me a call, my number's on there, send me an email, anything. Far away. I'm all ears. All right.
Thanks for your time, Alan.
Thank you.
That's great. I hope you liked this episode. If you did, please give it a thumbs up and feel free to comment. If you haven't yet subscribed, hit the subscribe button and the notification bell to be advised of new interviews when they're uploaded. I hope you join us again sometime. Catch you later.